everyone, welcome back to another Olinguri & Co. podcast. Today I am hosting alone, but I have a guest, and without any further ado, let's welcome Izzy... Sorry, I messed it up. I just asked you earlier. Izzy Boop! FPV? Not FPV, no, just Izzy Boop it is, I think.
Yeah, it's whatever, and it's so funny too. Everyone always just like kind of does their own thing with my name. I've been called like Iggy Pop. I've been called like Izzy Pop. I'm just like, whatever. It's cool.
I'm so sorry. Because I was like, don't say Izzy. And I ended up saying it. And I'm like, oh my God. But it's good to have you. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's the evening for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, for me, it's like 6:30-ish p.m.
Yeah, okay.
Here in the Philadelphia area.
Yes, yeah. You live in the Philadelphia area. You're close to Butt Grinder and all this little gang, correct?
Yeah, Bot's like a 15-minute drive from me. He's like right there.
Okay, that's cool. That's good. So if people haven't come across your Instagram account or any of your social media yet, do you want to introduce yourself, like who you are? We just said where you live, but also how long you've been flying, anything you want to tell us about you as a person?
Yeah, sure. So but yeah, so I guess we already went over. You can find me as Izzy Boop on pretty much anything. I've been flying for about two and a half years. I started flying like right after the whole COVID pandemic thing happened, and in my state that happened like March 2020 ish. Okay. So like right around that time I started actually getting into like FPV drones and all that. I had camera drones for years before that, because I had done videography and I had always been like interested in like just quadcopters and drones and what have you, and I just kind of took like the normal entry that I think a lot of people ended up taking. But I actually got introduced to the idea of drones when I was younger, because I used to play this like anti-grav racing game. I don't know if anyone knows about it, called Wipeout.
Yeah,
and so me and my roommate at the time were just like hyper into this game, and we held like tournament rankings and whatnot, and we were like kind of like some of the top ranked people because we're giant losers. And once we kind of pulled off of that, and like the game studio devolved and the game stopped being made and all that stuff, whole nother story, we were just like, well, we want something that's similar. So FPV drones was actually like our entry into Wipeout, but in real life. So it was kind of like, so my entry was in racing, even though like when I finally got my first 5-inch, I just went freestyle. But like when I was simming and all that, I did all sim racing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I built a 5, and I just went freestyle. And now that's pretty much what I'm doing now, is like heavy freestyle.
Yeah.
even though actually, literally, I was working on this when I was waiting to get into the chat with you. It's for those who are listening and can't see, obviously. I just held up a Street League racer. It's the 399 practice rig. So I'm gonna start doing 7-inch racing, because I'm insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm actually kind of going back to my roots there, getting into racing.
And nice. Yeah. Nice. Okay. Well, you said you have a background of video gaming a bit, and video making. Do you want to tell us a bit more about the video making and then maybe video game later?
Yeah, absolutely. So like my background is all over the place. video production and like special effects was like kind of one of the things I went to school for. So I had like a big videography background before I started in drones or quadcopters, and that's kind of where I spent most of my time, other than like now I actually don't do that anymore at all, besides for my YouTube. I've moved from that field. I do cybersecurity now, but other than the video production, pretty much all my spare time was spent on video games, which is funny because now that I got into FPV drones, I don't think I've played a video game in months. I just like drones are my video game now. So it's weird how things change. Like I went from like being a videographer who plays video games all the time to now I'm a cybersecurity worker who just goes outside and plays with my toy helicopters, like, you know.
That sounds super cool though. Cybersecurity. I have no idea how any of this works.
You don't want to. It's a lot. It's not a very glamorous field. It's not like what it looks like in the movies, I promise you.
Is that something you can do from home, or do you have to go to an office and stuff like that?
I'm lucky enough to be able to do it from home. So I work completely remotely, so I could kind of move anywhere in the world if I wanted to and continue to do my job. Some places require you to like be there on site, but my job doesn't care. They're like, I actually the other day I asked them about like if they would ever care if I moved somewhere, and they legitimately thought I meant a different country.
Oh,
They were like, "Why? Where do you want to go? Like Italy or something?" And I was like, "No, I was thinking another state. What, you weirdo?"
Maybe they're used to it. They're used to this request.
Yeah, they kind of are. I think one of our other guys just moved to like Ireland or something, just on a whim. So yeah, so they kind of just don't care. So I can do my job pretty much anywhere. It's kind of great. I'm
That's
lucky.
great.
I'm lucky in that regard. Yeah.
That's good to know, because when you're a FPV pilot, especially freestyle, like you said, well, even though you're getting back to racing, but let's say first, if you want to be on holiday anywhere around the world, you can take your drones and you can work. That's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really cool. Like I actually went down and I visited Atlanta recently, and I was able to just like have my laptop on me in case anything happened. 'Cause like being working in like a security capacity, I kind of need to at least be able to see my alerts, like if something happens. Luckily nothing did, but it was really cool being able to just like get on a plane and just go visit some FPV friends down in Atlanta. Like I hung out with Ciotti and all them, and we just and I was able to just not care. Like I was, you know, it was really fun.
Siori is very, very cool.
Oh, I love him. He's one of my favorites. He's such a good guy.
Do you have some inspiration as drone pilot, like people who motivate you to go out and just fly after you see what they're doing or stuff like this?
Oh God, yeah, I do. There's so many of them, but I think each pilot that I really look up to has like a different thing they bring to the table. Like, I think my first pilot who I really looked up to, was actually Bot. And I think that makes sense because like now that we hang out literally just all the time, my style and his style kind of like are very similar now in how we fly. But he was one of the first people I kind of looked up to, and I think it was less about his flying and more about how he was like as a person. I saw him as more of like, I'm doing this for fun, I'm doing this for humor, I'm just gonna be me. And I really loved that about him. And then when I met him and found out he's just a really genuine human, it was really cool. But other than I feel like the obvious one, because if you watch Botch channel, you've seen me. Other than that, like I've had a lot of inspiration from pilots like Sync FPV. Sync is, in my opinion, just insane. Like just the skill coming out from that pilot is just nuts. So like I've never hung out with Sync. I've never really even talked with Sync at all, but just every time a video comes out from Sync, I have to watch it. I have to. And I would say another pilot that is less known, but I really look up to on their style a lot, and I kind of try to rip things from how they fly all the time, would be Eva FPV. Because she hardly uploads stuff, but she'll send me like videos sometimes of like something that she did that day. And I feel like she's like just a really underappreciated ripper. And so I look up to like her style a lot because it's really smooth. She kind of thinks of things like and takes obstacles differently than you would expect. So I look up to her a lot too in like stylings. There's so many more. Like I feel like I take a little thing from like almost everybody, but I would say those three really are like the first three that come to mind.
How would you describe your own style if you had to describe it to people listening?
Oh, st probably stupid.
No, you're not allowed to say that.
No, but in all seriousness, I think if I had to like even describe it, I'm not a fan really of like the flippy floppy kind of stuff. Like I appreciate it, and I do see a lot of like inspiration in that kind of like video when I watch them, but I'm more of, I feel like I'm like in the middle. Like I'm not incredibly flowy, but I feel like I do like a lot of more like urban freestyle where there's some flow and then there's some like hitting some gaps and You got like a flip here, you got a flip there. So I feel like it's like almost like mid flow, if that's a thing. We'll just make up a term.
We can.
And I think like I've been trying to get even smoother with it because I like the really slow swooping movements and then like the slow, like one of my favorite tricks that I like doing recently, which isn't even really a trick, but it's just like you do a power loop and you just hold it and you do a moonwalk where you just like kind of throw your quad backwards and you just hold it there for a couple seconds. I really love that kind of trick where you're like holding yourself upside down or holding yourself at an angle for like an extended time. And I like doing that kind of thing and then doing a snap motion because that goes with music really well.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's the kind of thing I like. I am one of those people who removes prop sound from my videos. I like to sync it with music. And I know there's like a whole subset of people who are like, "Oh, I don't like that." Well, I do.
Me
You
too.
know? So I really like to sync my stuff up with music. So I kind of like whatever my style would be called. I think I just like syncing with music. And
Yeah, I'm
it's, you know,
totally with you on that. Yeah,
like half
definitely.
flowy, some snap movements, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I remember the first time people did what you mentioned, which we it was one trick, like doing the power loop or doing a quick flip with a bit of momentum and then staying in the air without moving, just carrying momentum. I think some people were calling that hang time or something like that at the time. And the first time we saw
Absolutely.
that, yeah, everybody was like, "Oh, I can't remember who was the first person I saw doing this." And once you see it, you're like, "I want to do this." And I think it became possible when people started using more and more 4S. So very quickly at the start of, you know, when people started flying, obviously, I know that people had started on 3S, and then, you know, when they moved to 4S, there was more power to do this kind of stuff. Also, flight controllers were getting better, so you wouldn't get like weird. You know, there was a time when air mode wasn't a thing. So the motors, when you cut motors, they wouldn't behave like how they behave now when you cut throttle. So I think when all of this sort of fell together, like, and it worked out, people were like, "Oh, hang on a minute. We don't have to just go forward and do flip-flops all the time. We can stop and use the momentum." And I assume, like, now with 6S, it's even like a bit easier. Do you fly 6S, or are you still on 4S?
Yeah, no, it's so funny that you mentioned that. I was never actually ever on 4S. Since I started in FPV kind of like comparatively to a lot of the people kind of late in the game. So when I started the norm was becoming pretty heavily towards 6S. So I just started right on 6. And like I have a couple small micros that are on like 4S where they use like the 4S 650 packs, but other than that all my quads are on 6.
Yeah, okay. Well, that leads to the question I wanted to ask you. It's gonna sound weird to you, because that's all you know, but I was gonna ask what it feels like to start a hobby in 2020. Like, how was the community? How did the community look like to you? And did you feel like it was a good place to join? Like, how did you meet people? All these kind of things.
No, so that is actually a really good question. I think my perspective is going to be an interesting one on that because I got into FPV and then I quickly started hanging out with and talking with what you would almost assume to be like the quintessential names in FPV. Like I would hang out with Bot, I would hang with Ciotti, like I would talk with Cricket and all them. So I kind of like quickly pushed myself into like hanging out with names people recognize. And that was more so just it happened because I liked Bot as a human, talked to him, and then through that, it just kind of happened. And because of that, I feel like that perspective is strange because it still feels so new to me. So it feels like I almost injected myself by accident into a group of people who've been around each other for so long, and then like in comes me out of nowhere kind of thing, you know? So it was a really weird, like, new kid syndrome. And I feel like I still have that to a degree sometimes, even like when I go visit in Atlanta and like I visit with Ciotti. And it's funny because like we'll hang out, we'll all talk to him all the time, and it still feels like, oh, I'm talking to Ciotti. It's so weird. I don't know. But so I feel like in that sense you get like a lot of like new kid syndrome. I guess probably because of who I surround myself with. But then on top of that, because of, I feel like, the social groups I'm part of, and FPV being like a primarily like a hobby that for a lot of people seems primarily male. It was almost a little unwelcoming at the start. But not from everybody. And so, like, you know, you can obviously tell, like, the kind of person I am. It's there's certain groups where, like, I would talk to people and it would just, like, I would get like a side eye or I'd get like a really weird vibe from them. So that I think that's why, like, and it's certainly not everybody. I feel like most of the FPV community really just doesn't care. And they're just really cool people. But like I definitely encountered a few starting because my entry had me in like Facebook groups and stuff, and that's like the worst place to be ever. But once I it really does all come back to like once I started talking to Bot because he's like such an accepting person and everyone who's around him and everyone that is a friend of him is also incredibly accepting. It really changed the whole game for me. So like not even to sound cheesy, but I gotta thank him for a lot of that.
No,
Like
that's true.
because he like not even on purpose, he kind of like brought me into like a place where I felt welcomed. And that is kind of why I pushed so hard in FPV. I had that like little bit of a support system there. It was really awesome. So.
Okay, that's a very interesting input. If you wanted, like, if we're talking about how difficult or easy it is to find information when you're a new person starting FPV in 2020, is that how did you find the experience of the learning experience of building your drone and knowing what you put in it? Was that easy or was that still confusing?
Yeah, so that's also a really good question. So I started, I feel like the same way a lot of people started, where I would hop on YouTube or I'd hop on Google and I'd look up like how to build an FPV drone. And the first results you'd get were either Bardwell's FPV know-it-all site, which was really helpful on like certain parts, why to get them and all that stuff, and also Steele's site, like on his, I think it was like his ethics site, he has like an FPV Bible or something that would like he taught you terminology and whatnot. They were like two of the first sites I kind of just read through. And I think because of the way I did that, it was overwhelming.
All
I
right.
almost feel like it was so much information up front that it almost didn't help, ironically. Which is funny because I come from an electronics background. Like I'm able, I before I got into FPV and along with like the videos and the cybersecurity, I also did like some electronics work. I did like soldering work. I messed with pretty much a bunch of different stuff. And so that was that, like, that hurdle didn't exist for me, the whole learning how to solder thing. So I didn't even need to worry about that or learning about like 5-volt ground RXTX. Like that was familiar to me. So I think what was weird to me was just maybe I was overthinking it because even though I had all that information, the second I saw everything in front of my face, like oh, the difference between 4 and 6S, the difference between certain controllings like Crossfire or at the time anything else, because like Tracer wasn't a thing, ERS wasn't a thing, but it was just like all the different things to pick from, and then I had the decision between like analog and digital, and I was like, what the hell do I do there? So it was interesting. But I think what ended up actually working is I watched a build video, just like a all the way through, like from start to finish build video, and that's what finally like made it click because I didn't buy the same parts in the video, but I got the parts I wanted, and then I like watched through a build video and kind of just like adapted what I needed to adapt like with previous knowledge I had, and I built my first quad, and it probably took like 3 days for my first build, but after that it was just like easy. So even though it was a lot of information, Steel and Bardwell's sites honestly just they came in handy during that build process so much. I constantly went back and referenced them.
That makes sense. I feel like at least it was condensed information for you that you found thanks to Joshua and Steele. At the time, I remember when people around me were trying to learn about building drones and stuff, it was mainly a channel called Project Blue Falcon. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. the person passed away like a couple of years after he started his channel, but he was the one helping. He was the one showing like the very basic things that we don't need anymore now because it's not relevant. But again, he was giving lots of information, but the fact that he was also showing in videos and people could do step by step following at the same time, I feel like this is very helpful. And thankfully, there's so many more build videos these days. It's probably very helpful. And I was actually curious, what did you go for? Did you go for analog or did you go for digital?
Yeah, so I started on analog.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually still fly analog on a lot of my quads, still.
Yeah.
And a lot of my quads I probably won't ever pull from analog unless like, well, HD0 is looking pretty promising, honestly. But I fly analog on, like, my freestyle quads, the ones where I really do appreciate just the real-time latency.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think it's the latency. I think it's just the way the latency feels.
Yes.
Like, with a digital quad, you feel like you're watching a screen. With an analog quad, you feel like you're feeling the quad.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case for everybody. Like, I'm usually not one of those people who gets into the whole analog versus digital, like, fight or whatever that some people have.
Yeah.
I think both systems are awesome. Like, I own DJI goggles, and I use it on, like, my drift quad and some of my cinematic quads, too. I think everything has, like, its use case. But yeah, I still fly analog, and that's what I started on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. There's lots of debates, and I own both. And I feel like they both have different purposes. Excuse me. I like using digital for work purpose because I like the strength of the signal for me. Especially because I fly a lot close to machinery and stuff like this, because that's what I do for a living. So there's lots of metal reflection, lots of concrete reflection. But as soon as I try to do freestyle with it, I'm like, oh yeah, I can do it. And if I swap straight away to analog after a flight on digital, I'm like, oh yeah, no, actually, this works better. I see less, but I react better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can't see anything at all, but like you can react, which is really nice.
Yes, and I had a friend who was telling me, I know I see less, but I see enough to know what I'm supposed to do. And I'm like, that's true. That's actually what I think too. I see enough to know what's going on, and then I like the latency. So, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I usually don't need to see scraggle and stuff anyway, because if I'm flying, I'm going so fast, I'm going to plow through it.
Yes.
Like, the only thing that matters to me is, like, wires and, like, bandos. And you know what? I'll hit them. And then on the next rip, I'll know it's there. Like, it's whatever. I don't care.
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of good bandos where you are. Well, I mean, America is a treasure place for bandos, but Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's because we're falling apart.
Yeah, so maybe it's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's because we're falling apart as a country. We have a bunch of bandos. It's great. Oh, especially God. Philadelphia. It's just, it's a mess, but in a good way, I think.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I remember when I went on a trip to the US in 2018, in California, when I flew with Zorro FPV, he took us to a full abandoned suburb, I would say. Maybe not suburb, but like a block of houses that was abandoned since that huge, you know, economic crisis in, I don't know when it was, 2005 or something like that?
2008, probably the housing crisis, 2008.
Yes, that one. So it was eerie to go there and all these houses. And same with Zoe FPV actually as well. We did two different places of just entire streets abandoned and no one there, and all the houses are there sitting, and you're like, oh my God, this is weird. I had never seen that before.
Yeah, so that's actually really creepy. I'd love to go visit something like that before, because, like, even though I live in the States, I've never seen a fully abandoned, like, neighborhood.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
For drones, it's great, but I would recommend don't go alone, because I was just like, oh, that's good, but I don't know how I feel about all this. But some people then ended up, you know, going there for a walk there with the dogs and stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay, people are making the most out of these places. But very strange, but good for FPV. FPV pilots. I just feel bad that now you said the country is falling apart.
I mean, it's a joke, but it's not.
That's why it's funny.
Yeah, you know.
Yes. Talking a bit about racing now. So I'm curious, what's on your build that you just showed me that no one could see when you said you were working on it because you're thinking of taking
it. Oh, yeah. So I started racing a little recently because I was invited to a local field by Flyaway FPV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she told me to come out because she we're personal friends, but she messaged me and she's like, "Hey, yo, nerd, race." And I was like, "Okay." Because that's how hard it is to convince me to do new things. So I ended up putting together a like multi GP spec quad, like a 5-inch.
Yeah.
And I didn't end up using the switchback frame. I actually ended up using a frame called a single core, which mm-hmm. is made by like someone kind of local, but it's a really nice frame. So I ended up using that one and I still love it. I almost swear by it. Mm-hmm. And that build's kind of basic. It's got like some random like mm-hmm. Falcon stack in it or something, but then it has like the heads up motors. It uses MCK V2 props. So it's like, it's your basic 5-inch racing quad. Mm-hmm. And while I really liked 5-inch racing, I felt like I wanted something where I could focus on lines more. And I always knew that like the DRL like racing was like, I know it was slower, it was heavier, and it was more focused on like very massive tracks and like hitting the lines correctly. And that's kind of what always appealed to me, because even when I started in the sim, I was doing Velocidrone, and I would also use the DRL sim a lot, and I kind of always liked the DRL sim more because it was like, it felt slower, it felt mm-hmm. more focused on like just the line, which is kind of where my competitive brain came in on that.
Yeah.
So I discovered that Street League is a thing, which okay. I think, I could be wrong, but I think was created so people who could practice like DRL at home.
Okay.
Like when they weren't like doing their actual like DRL seasons. Mm-hmm. If that's wrong, somebody will correct me, I'm sure. But I think that's what I heard. Yeah. So they the 399 practice rig was created to, I'm pretty sure, to emulate very closely the DRL Racer 4.
Okay.
So it's just like a big, chonky, heavy frame. Mm-hmm. And it has the same specs of everything. So like the motors are supposed to be like 1250 kV. You're supposed to be on 5S. You have a weight class that you're supposed to be like 1280 grams at least.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very heavy and it's very slow. And I kind of really like that. So the quad I'm building has the practice rig frame,
mm-hmm.
a bunch of random 3D prints because I had to make it heavier for the weight spec.
Yep.
I'm using weird motors right now, which I might swap out. These are the iFlight 2806.5 or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, 2806.5 1800 kV. So okay. I'm going to have to put a motor output limit on them. But these, I just pulled them off my, I had a 7-inch drift chase quad.
Okay.
That I used, and I kind of just deconstructed that and turned it into this racer.
Mm-hmm.
But then I have just a Mamba stack in here. I think it's the F722S
mm-hmm.
stack, yeah. which they don't even make anymore. This one's just kind of hanging on by a thread, and it's still alive somehow.
Yeah.
And for the video system, well, I have Express LRS in here, because I like to fly at 500 hertz, because I'm insane. But for the video system, I'm actually putting Walk Snail in here.
Okay. All right.
Because I wanted to do something stupid, and I'm curious if it'll work well, because my friend Flyaway actually started racing on DJI.
Okay.
And she's a pretty skilled racer, and she felt almost no impact from going from analog to digital. She was like, it was about a day of getting used to it, and then she was hitting the same times.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of took that idea, and I was like, let me see what happens. And I was being sent a Walk Snail kit, and I probably shouldn't have said that, but whatever. They can deal with it. So I was like, all right, screw it. I wanted to try out the goggles anyway. I liked how they were smaller, and I liked how they had canvas mode. That was mm-hmm. kind of like the big appeal for me over DJI, because I love my DJI goggles, but the canvas mode hack is annoying.
Okay.
And I just never really liked how massive they were.
Yeah.
So the Walk Snail system, I was like, it's smaller, it has canvas mode, and the new firmware seems a little promising. Okay. It looks like they fixed a lot of the problems, so I'm throwing that into this racer. And
nice.
Gonna see how stupid it is and if I like it.
Yeah. And obviously you've already found people you're gonna fly with. Are they all building the same kind of
thing? So my info might be vaguely incorrect, but from what I heard, the chapter I fly with is called Safety Third Racing. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of based in like northern New Jersey, some in like Pennsylvania, some races in like New York. I think they're starting up an actual street league, like chapter or league, whatever it's called, at that, like, for their chapter. Because there's not really one in our area. The closest one is in like New York City. And then like other than that, the next one's in like Florida.
Yeah.
So I think they're starting up a street league, and as far as I know, there's like 5 or 6 people already who have practice rigs built.
Okay. That's decent.
So, yeah, so we've definitely got like people to actually fly against. So come this season, we should have like a good amount of people to, you know, get going.
Nice. I'm really exciting.
I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. Have you ever watched any X-Class race with those giant drones that are flying in like circles?
Yeah, so I don't think I've ever actually ended up watching a real official race or like an actual like multiple quads racing, but I have seen like videos of an X-Class drone going through like going through a track.
Yeah.
And it's honestly insane. If I said I wasn't thinking about building one, I'd be lying. But I think I might avoid that for now. I bet you in like a year or two I'll have one built because I'm insane and I will do something like that. I'll just get bored and I'll be like, screw it, I'm going to build an X-Class and it'll just happen.
It looks like you're touching all the areas of FPV. You just mentioned chasing drift earlier, so you've done that too before.
Yeah, so I know a lot of people say like drift is overdone. I hear that a lot.
Who cares?
But exactly, who cares? I don't do FPV for like what's popular on YouTube. I do FPV because I like it and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things is to go to the track near me and just chase drift cars. Like, it's just incredibly fun. I also think it's really useful for getting like a big upgrade in muscle memory on your quad, because it's such like a high octane situation. It's like a very high risk situation too, because we like to get incredibly close to the cars, and we've had a few quads get ran over and destroyed. So it's like, it's kind of a high risk situation, so you get a lot of muscle memory out of it, and it's a lot of good practice for me. I'm actually going this weekend. there's an event, so I'm doing that Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, so I go all the time. Whenever the season starts, I probably end up going to the track 8 to 10 times.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
Each season. So yeah, I really love drift, and I actually, in a couple weeks after this weekend, to get the remainder of my footage, I'll be putting out another video that's just like a 2023 drift edit. That's just purely drift footage. So, yeah. Ooh.
I do think that chasing drift car, you learn a lot about throttle management, because that's another type of throttle management than you do when you're racing or when you freestyle, because you have to go fast, like crazy fast in some times, and then a lot less fast when they're in corners and drifting.
Yeah, you really do. Like, one of the things that I like to work on specifically, and it's one of the places where I can improve heavily, is... Mm-hmm. Specifically in that throttle management, like, one of the people who I look up to when it comes to like drift chase is somebody I know personally, actually down from Atlanta, is Squints FPV.
Okay.
His real name's Adam, but whenever I see him drop his videos, he's insane with it. Like, I know we're on audio, so I can't really, like, any hand motions I do, you won't be able to see, but he's always, like, right behind the car, and then he'll spike his throttle real quick and kind of flip around, and we'll be flying backwards on his momentum.
Oh, wow.
Looking at the front of the car, and then he'll snap roll and go back again, and he'll never be more than, like, 2 feet away from the car that whole time. Like,
wow.
He's locked onto it. So when it comes to throttle management, I feel like Adam is pretty superhuman. But it's honestly just stick time. Like, he's just so involved in it. And that's the kind of thing that I want to work on a little bit more, because you're absolutely right. There's a different kind of throttle management between freestyle with racing, and then I feel like drift is a whole different kind on its own.
Yeah.
Because you're doing all that throttle management while you're moving at, like, 90 the whole time.
Yeah.
So, and, yeah.
And it's hard to also predict where the car is going to be, and you want to keep it in frame. And it's a lot of knowledge, because if you want to have the speed that goes with the car at the start, you don't want to... Because your camera is fixed on the drone, you want to be able to keep the car in the frame. And if suddenly there's a big change of speed because they started to initiate and do their thing, you're like, oh my God, you know, you don't want to. It's a lot of anticipation as well. I find it very interesting.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. There's so many times during drift where you are moving, you're moving less on like the actual like prop dynamics of the quad, and you're moving more on like momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll give yourself like a throttle spike real quick, and you'll just be like, and like we all know that quads can move sideways pretty easily, but you'll be moving it like sideways in a very strange way, or like sideways and looking back even to a degree, and you're just kind of you're like almost on zero throttle.
Yeah.
At that point, and you're just like moving backwards on your momentum, but then you need to be able to, in like a split second, like under like a third of a second, go full throttle again and like snap roll and follow that car around. It's a lot. But I think it's incredibly fun. Like, anybody can get out there and chase a drift car, but it's different when you're right up on the car.
Yeah.
And you're doing something other than just like looking at the back end of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're actually like snapping and looking at the front of it and all that, it requires so much more throttle discipline. More than I currently have. And it's I think that's why it's so fun to me, because it's still something that I haven't perfected.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're the first person I speak to, even like either on the podcast or outside of the podcast, who mentioned that this is incredible to build FPV skills, and I agree. Like, it's such a good point. There's in Australia, there's a guy, a pilot, who's called Black Market FPV. That's where I met him one day on a drift track location. And yeah, he does more than just sticking to the car. He really likes, again, I'm doing hands movement like you, no one will be able to see. He likes coming from very high, like close to those gum trees that we have, and then he drops and picks the car as it's coming, which lots of people do. But also, he does it in a way that I was very impressed. He was literally super high in the sky, picks the car he wants, and then he's right on it and sticks to it. And I'm like, oh my God, this requires so much more skills than people think it does.
Yeah. I've seen that a couple times, and I've attempted that a few times, and it looks easy, but it's such a discipline in timing too.
Yes.
And it's so much, because you're coming in so hot and you're coming in so fast from so high up in the sky, and then you need to stop right below, like right above the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like a foot or two above the ground, and then also be locked right behind the car. It's so much. Whenever I see a shot like that, I appreciate it so much.
Especially when it's not rehearsed, because obviously when it's track day for drift drivers, they just do their thing on the track, and
yeah,
you have to improvise with them, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
It is. Is there anything else you're interested beside this at the moment that really, you know, light the passion for you and in FPV?
I don't know, like anything I have like a passion for, like in FPV specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't know. Like, I think I have like a couple like niches that I like to sit inside right now. Like, I have my freestyle that I've been doing, mm-hmm. which is just like that's honestly just like, I'm bored, let's go outside and have fun, and I bring a GoPro. And then with the racing and the drifting, I think like those are my three like happy spaces right now.
Yeah.
I've done some like cinematic work.
Yeah.
But I don't chase that. It's funny. I feel like I'm one of the few people who doesn't actually want to get into FPV as like a career.
Mm, yeah.
Cause I see it as like such a important and pivotal hobby to me.
Mm.
So I think I just kind of like where I'm at in my niches in FPV, because like, the second I turn it into a job, I'm not going to like it anymore.
Yeah, that's very true.
I did FPV actually as a full-time job for about a year.
Okay.
Within my first year of FPV, and I did it for the company I work for right now. It was really fun, and it was like fine and all, but it was really annoying managing like, oh, here's my work rigs and here's my ones I go out and play with and all that stuff. And I didn't like having to think like, oh, I might have a shoot tomorrow that's not even planned, and I get hit with it in the morning, so now I had to like always have batteries charged, like almost at all times, because like it takes a while to charge up packs, and sometimes I got hit with shoots like completely unplanned, and it was a lot. After about a year, I was just like, you know what, I'm done. I'm gonna go do cybersecurity like I've wanted to do for a while, and I'm just gonna treat this like a hobby.
Yeah. FPV can be overwhelming as a job. There's so many things to think, and it's still like a work in progress when you have to find your place on a, you know, on a video set. Like it's not always movie sets, but you know, it can be anything on a production place. You have to think of so many things, and no one is really there to assist you. I was talking about this with Umagod FPV, who does that professionally, and he was saying he really much prefers when he has to fly a red camera, because then all he has to focus on is his drone, and then the person who brings the red camera and put it on the drone, you know, is the he's in charge of the data and the video, and I do think that just a sec.
Hey!
They're fighting.
I said stop! No fight.
Hold on, just a sec. I'll be back.
No fight. Thank you. Alright, I got it.
So I totally understand all of this, what you said. Keeping it as a hobby is a lot more relaxing and enjoyable, especially when you want to try all these different things that you just mentioned, you know. So, yeah. So if people want to have a look at what you're doing, you said you're on YouTube, Instagram. There's also, do you have a Discord platform?
So if you wanted to, like, hang out with me inside Discord, Your honest best bet is just hop inside the Botgrinder Discord.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of his mods in there, so honestly I just hang in there pretty much all day.
Yeah.
But I do have my own Discord called LGBTQFPV.
Okay.
Which is like for like the LGBTQ scene within FPV, kind of to give people like a place where they feel like they can actually hang out. It's a bit smaller of a server, but I do have links to that on in my Instagram. My Instagram has a link to a link tree in my, like, in my whatever thing, the about me part, and that does have a link to the Discord. But even though it's my own Discord, I really do say, like, if you wanted to chat with me, it's probably just best to hop into side bots, because you'll probably have a much easier time getting a hold of me, because I'm just in there more. And, and other than that, just my YouTube and Instagram. That's kind of just where I'm at.
Cool. Well, that's how I found you, Instagram.
Absolutely.
I don't know why the puppies are so wild. Obviously, there will be some editing in this episode. People might hear them in the background. Can you please just stop? Usually it's fine, but this morning, I swear. Do you have any pets?
I do. I actually have four turtles, though, so that they're not going to bark.
No, that would be concerning.
Yeah, I would be kind of scared if my turtle started barking.
Well, thanks for coming today on the episode. It was really nice to learn more about you. Hopefully, if you're allowed to travel, like we said, one day maybe you can come over in Australia. I keep harassing Botgrinder to come, so please motivate him, take him with you, do anything with a lot of other people, and just come over.
I will. I've always wanted to come out to Australia. I think it's one of the countries on my bucket list, and so
yeah.
I've been able to convince Bot to do a couple things. Maybe I can schmooze him a little bit and get him to go out there.
I mean, to be fair, it's expensive, especially after the pandemic. It's even more expensive, and it's not an easy trip. It's like a I don't know, from the US it's probably a day in a plane, like without counting stops. So it's not fun.
Probably at least. I'm legitimately like, I'm on Google Maps now because I'm curious. Like I'm curious what the flight would be.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it can't even calculate a flight. That's so funny.
That's because we don't exist. You know, the Earth is flat and we're all actors.
Right, right. Yeah, the Earth is flat. It's a 22-hour flight. Oh my god.
Yeah, and you're not even counting the time where you're changing planes, which can add another 7 hours or, you know, 6 hours.
Yeah, and it says it's like a $2,200 plane ticket.
Oh, wow, that's even more. What? Oh my god. Yeah, that's well, amazing. Maybe wait a bit.
But no, I would absolutely love to come out there sometime. It's always been a place I wanted to go. That and Norway are two big countries I've wanted to go to. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And probably very different to fly. Very different.
Yeah, Norway is a lot shorter of a flight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, now that I'm thinking of that, I wonder, you know what was interesting when I came from... So when I went to visit everybody in the US, I was coming from the place called Northern Territory in Australia, and that's where you usually have 40 degrees Celsius. I think it's about, I don't know, in Fahrenheit. That's tricky. Probably, is 120 a lot?
Yeah, it's a lot. That's like above 100 for us, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So that's probably what it is. And, you know, my drones were tuned for that kind of environment. And then when I went to fly in Philadelphia and it was winter, because you know how seasons are opposite. So I arrived, the first place I went to after France was New York, and then I went to Seabot. And it was winter and my drones were not flying the same. Like it was definitely a huge difference, because I think when I was visiting Bot, it was maybe 10 degrees Celsius, which is like not far from where it can snow, you know, something like this. I'm like, oh my god, it felt like the drone was really struggling. And then when I went over in California and it was humid and hotter, well, I had like slight vibrations that I had to sort out. So I'm thinking, if you want to do Norway, and then also if you want to do Australia, it's gonna be interesting. I'd be curious to see how it goes for people who travel with their drones that are tuned for a certain location, and then they go somewhere else and it's different. I find it interesting.
I mean, it's funny too, because in where, even just where I am, like, and I know Celsius actually, so I can just use the terms you're familiar with. It goes between like 10 Celsius ish to like right now it's 27.
Okay.
So just in that jump, even though like it's not like 40 like in Australia, just like between like 10 and 27, even just between 20 and 27 Celsius, like there's differences in like our tunes. So like we joke about it all the time, like when it's winter around here and it's about, I'd say anywhere between 10 and 15, we'll have a tune, but then I'll have a completely different tune for when it gets up to like 25 27. So it's funny. So most of my quads actually have two rate profiles and for different tuning and whatnot, because I'll just switch to a different profile like once like winter comes around. We've noticed that, and it's like super annoying to me, so I went ahead and made different profiles.
That's good to know. Actually, I forgot, I had a question when you were talking about doing a bit of everything, freestyle racing, and I wanted to ask about your rates, like if you were also changing your rates depending on what kind of flying you were doing.
Yeah, so it's funny. My rates have been like a big thing that I've never been able to decide on, but I actually just landed on rates that I love. I used to be about between 700 and 900 degrees per second on my rates with like almost no expo. I think my expo was like 0.2. Mm-hmm. So there was like a little bit. But that's pretty minimal. And I think it's kind of normal for like a lot of freestylers. And recently I actually changed, and that was applied to everything. That was racing, that was freestyle, that was drift. Now I actually fly on, for freestyle and drift and cinematic and everything like that, so everything but racing, I fly on 570 degrees maximum with an expo of 0.57.
Okay.
So, like, a lot of expo. So, it's, like, the center stick is very, like, very smooth, and it's almost not responsive.
Yeah.
And those are rates that, like, a friend of mine had, like, told me to try out, and I love them. They're, okay. They feel so perfect. I noticed that, like, I was able to fly the way I wanted to so much more.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to racing,
mm-hmm.
I dial them back a little bit, probably about 500 even-ish, maybe 510.
Okay.
And I just get rid of the expo entirely, completely linear.
Yeah.
So it's the same rates, just dialed back a little bit, I think, on the RC rate, and then expo gone.
Wow, that's interesting.
And it's weird because once I tried just getting rid of the expo to do linear, and it didn't feel right. But then once I went to linear and pulled the rate down a little bit, it felt kind of the same. So, like, obviously the expo behaves differently, but, like, when I fly freestyle and I now move over, like, the next day to go to a race or something,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I'm needing to take, like, a whole lot of time to retune, like, my muscle memory or anything.
Yeah.
I kind of just go fly. Like, I'll maybe have one warm-up pack and then just go fly. Like, I'm used to it. So, they're so similar in feel. So.
Okay. I was asking personally, like, because I'm selfishly, I'm trying to go back to racing on simulator just for, I have no interest at the moment racing in real life, but just for stick time, you know, and also muscle memory and learning different things. So I'm racing on Velocidrone. And I, after a while, I was like, oh my God. On Velocidrone, first off, I found out that just like, you know, years ago when I flew on the sim, I had to artificially make my quad less efficient because it's just too efficient in my opinion compared to my real drone. And also my rates were too high for racing in my opinion, and I don't have like crazy high rates. I'm around 800-850 when I do freestyle with barely any expo, but I found out that when I'm racing I have to be like half the rates. So I was like, maybe that's because I don't have any experience. Maybe I don't know what's going on. Maybe because it's Velocidrone. This is what I was asking about your rates. Because, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're curious, I can just straight tell you what my rates are that I use for racing. I actually just pulled up my rates that I use for racing. So I don't use Betaflight rates. I actually use what the actual rates.
Okay.
And I can send this to you in a DM too afterwards. But just so like the listeners can know too, in case they're curious, my center and all three axes are the same for me.
Okay.
I know some racers who kind of do different things, but my center's at 50.
Mm-hmm.
My max is 510, mm-hmm. and my expo is just 0.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can I'll send that over to you in a DM too in case like you forget or whatever, if you don't feel like going back into listening. But yeah, for any of the listeners who wanted to try those out too, that's what I use. I'm in no way a professional racer. I mean, I'll probably change those a million times through my career, but you know.
Yeah, but it's good to know what other people do, especially I have a lot of freestyle people who listen to this, and I know I do think that practicing tracks on a sim can only help you with your freestyle in real life. So, because I used to do lots of freestyle in Velocidrone, but now that I'm back on it, because there was a time where I changed laptop, and when I reinstalled Velocidrone on it, I couldn't fly it. I was sick, and I couldn't figure out why. I was getting so sick, and after like 3 minutes on it, I was like, I'm gonna puke. So I don't know what was happening. Well, I did at the time. I didn't know, and then I sorted it out with screen refresh rate and field of views. It's still not perfect, but definitely I can fly an hour and still be fine. After an hour, I start being tired. But yeah, before I used to do freestyle and I was like, yeah, that's fun. And I think my skills improved, but at the moment, just following some tracks that, you know, are very tight in my opinion because I don't race. it's definitely a challenge and I really like it. So I need any help I can get. And since you are close to, you know, what I like doing as well, in terms of doing lots of different things in FPV, I do think that your insight is going to be helpful to me because we're sort of similar in what we want to do. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to definitely forget that. Which makes me think now, you also made me question my freestyle rates. Because I'm like, do I need more expo? Because I always thought I shouldn't fly with too much expo. At least that's an old belief. But I wonder if I need to change that too now.
So I think what it is with the freestyle rates is because I know some people who freestyle with just linear expo, like on zero. And then I know people who have even higher expo than me. Like, I know somebody who flies at 0.75 expo.
Oh, wow, what?
Like, it's a lot. Actually, I think that might be Squints.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Squints, if you're listening, shut up. but, yeah, I know it was either him or someone who had, like, 0.75 or, like, really high rates and, or really high expo. Mine, For my freestyle, my rates were exactly the same as my racing. They were very similar. It was just 50 center, 570 max.
Yeah, okay.
And then 0.57 on the expo. So it's really easy to remember. It's just like 50, 570, then 0.57. Like, it's all...
Yeah.
But, and I think those rates are awesome, actually. Cause, and it's funny, because of steel, I actually started at 1100.
Yeah.
On my rates, like, when I was starting, I think it was like 0.21 on expo is like what he was doing at the time, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think I like that expo because I'm able to kind of do like a full deflect and I can still like snap roll quickly and I can still do like fast moves if I need to, but that center stick is so smooth.
Okay.
So it makes it so I hardly need any stabilization. If I want to put up like a professional video, I can put incredibly light stabilization on it.
Yeah.
Just to get rid of like teeny twitches and it looks really nice. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. What do you use to stabilize? I was about to finish the episode, but we keep like talking about things. I'm enjoying it. Just let me know if you have something to do.
No, I don't at all. So if you just keep thinking of stuff, this is fine. I currently use Gyroflow. I did use Real Steady. I had Real Steady 1. I had a license for it, and then I tried out Real Steady 2. Mm. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think they're great. I just like the control that comes with Gyroflow.
Yeah, okay.
And there's one option Gyroflow has that, at least at the time, Real Steady didn't have. It might have it now. So anybody listening, if you're about to call me wrong, don't. I'll cry.
oh, no.
Just kidding. But Gyroflow had an option called Lock Zoom.
Okay.
Because Real Steady would do that thing where you're flying and it would kind of zoom in and out you were flying. And it had that really Real Steady feel, even if you turned the stab all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and my settings on Real Steady were actually, like, low and slow, where the stabilization amount was super low, and then the speed of, like, the movements was with the slowest possible. So the two sliders, like, one was all the way left, one was all the way right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just what I would do. Just all the way left, all the way right, done. For Gyroflow, it's super similar. I just lock the zoom.
Yeah.
Okay. And my stabilization is, like, 0.1. It's, like, low.
Yeah.
But that's what I use, so.
Yeah, okay. Gyroflow uses the information from the flight controller still, or...?
It does, but it can also just, if you have footage from a GoPro, it just automatically grabs the gyro data from the video file.
Ah, okay. All right. Hmm.
You just kind of, like, drop the video file into the software, and it just grabs it. You wait, like, 20 seconds for it to grab the lens profile, and then it just has it. You don't really have to do anything at all. It's pretty easy now.
Cool. I don't really stabilize freestyle because it's weird in my opinion. But when I need it for work, that would be interesting to try something else, something different. So, because I've tried the 360 InstaGo. That was the first one I've ever tried because I thought that's easy. And then I ended up buying Real Steady because I needed it for work and I've been very happy. Damn it, I forgot to claim it on tax. I just realized. I did my tax yesterday and I was like, I feel like there's something I'm forgetting. It was Real Steady. Anyway, doesn't matter. and when I bought it and I was like, oh yeah, that's very professional. And then I learned it was Gyroflow and I didn't know it was free because it's free, correct?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I could have tried this. So... Yeah, I'm curious about it. I wonder, I do think that the zoom feature still happens. You know, the weird feeling you said on Real Steady, it still does zoom in and out a bit, even if you don't have that much from memory.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure if they had like a checkbox to like do a lock zoom. Because Gyroflow does have that lock zoom. Now, the downside of that is like it picks a zoom amount that will get rid of that. It will be able to stabilize your whole footage on, like it analyzes the whole file and then picks a zoom amount that it can stay at for the whole footage. So you might find that for instead of like it zooming in and out, where like in some parts of your footage it could zoom out further and you could get more of your frame. If you use lock zoom, it's gonna kind of just be zoomed in a little bit for the whole thing, but it won't move.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a little bit of a pro and con there, and some people will weigh the option back and forth, but I like it on, and I like it with super low stabilization. Like the kind of stuff I want to get rid of is just like if I'm behind a car, and like I don't know if it's a wake behind them, like the air turbulence behind the car will kind of like make the quad stutter sometimes.
Yep.
That's really all I want to get rid of. I don't want to get rid of like any of the natural hand motions, like any of my natural twitches in my stick input.
Yeah.
Like I still like it to look very human when you're flying.
Yeah.
So if you like look at like a lot of my recent like drift footage, it still looks like it still looks almost unstabilized. But I did stabilize it a little bit just to get rid of like that like turbulence from behind the car. So it's like,
yeah,
I like a super low stab.
Is that something that doesn't that can't get rid? Because I have an old GoPro 6. This is why I'm asking. Yeah, like I'm I'm a dinosaur here. The turbulence of the car, could you get rid of it by having stabilization in the new GoPros these days? Or
I think so. Probably. Okay. I might try it out this weekend and let you know.
Yeah.
Because I know actually Bot completely got stopped using like RealSteady and Gyroflow. Bot just goes out with HyperSmooth.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he just started using that because, well, he's the king of being lazy. but I can give that a shot. I mean, like, because I have a GoPro 10 and I have two 8s that I use. So I'll try HyperSmooth on them and I'll actually let you know. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do all hyper smooth in case there's like something going on and then all your footage is ruined because you've tried.
Oh
something.
Yeah, no, I'll try it on like one go or something. But yeah,
I would feel. Isn't that the worst thing when you try something new and then you're like, I think it's working, and you go home and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, no, I'll probably just try it on like the first run where like the car's just come out and I'm warming up. But yeah, no, I'll give it a shot.
Cool. So that's this weekend. That's what you're going to do this weekend close to your place, or are you going something particular?
No, it's pretty close. It's like an hour north of me.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I like how Americans are a bit like Australians, and you guys are okay to drive several hours to go places. When you tell that to Europeans, they're like, oh my god, 1 hour drive.
That's one of the funniest things to me. I have a couple friends I talk to in like the UK. And like and like a couple different countries over there, and it's like I tell them like I took a short drive of an hour somewhere, and they're like, that's a long drive, what do you mean? It's like, it's really not. I drove 15 hours to Georgia when I went down the first time. Like,
oh, wow.
That's a long drive.
Yeah I just visited like, a friend over the last weekend in Adelaide. It was 8.5 hours drive, and it's still hard, especially as we get old. Like,
yeah.
I told you this morning my back was hurting. It's probably linked to that too.
Yeah, we're at the age when we're going to like sneeze and our back's going to hurt for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's going to
happen. Right about there.
But at least that's something that is good. Like, I know if I have American friends coming to visit in Australia and we're like, oh, you know, I know this good spot two or three hours away, people be like, yeah, fine, we can do that. If I tell that to French people, they'd be like, are you crazy? we need to stop on the way, spend the night. Anyway, it was really, really good to have you here today. Thanks for joining. I learned so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This was super fun. Thanks for having me on.
No worries.
It was really great.
Yeah, so do you want to remind everybody of your FPV handle so I don't mispronounce it, and the platforms they can find you? Do a bit of your advertisement.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys wanted to go check me out, you can find me on Instagram as izzyboop_FPV. You can find me on YouTube as just izzyboop. And you can also find me inside the Bot Grinder Discord, probably being a an absolute child. So, you know, check it out. Come hang out.
Yes, do it. Do it. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode. If you want to follow us on social media, it's Onigiri & Co. on Instagram, Onigiri FPV on Instagram, and my usual co-host is Mayan Hai on Instagram. She's also on YouTube. I'm also on YouTube. You know the thing. The best way to support our podcast is to share it with people you think would be interested in the topics we talk about on this episode or on this podcast. And thanks again to Torvald for sponsoring us. And that's pretty much it. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, I wish you some happy flying. Bye-bye.